Welcome to Special Pet Special Needs, a show that shines the light on special needs dogs and cats and the unique challenges they face in life. I'm Lisa Starr, Scouts House, a physical rehabilitation therapy and boarding facility for special needs pets in Menlo Park, California. And today we have grief counselor Bonnie Goodman with us, joining us to talk about pet loss and bereavement. And that's something that all of us face, whether we share our lives with special needs pets or not. And it's something that I think personally brings one of the greatest heartaches to life. I have told people very clearly about this, that on other shows, that I had lost my 12-and-a-half-year-old black lab mix a year ago now, and I am still heartbroken at having lost him. So this is something that I will professionally be interested in hearing about, but also personally, I think I need to hear what Bonnie has to tell us today. So we will encourage you, too, to join the conversation if you would like. Just click on the button in the upper right corner of your screen and instant message us with your questions or comments, and we would be very happy to get them on the air. So let's get started. Bonnie, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome, and thank you, Lisa, and all the listeners for inviting me to talk.
Great. Well, I have to say you have a very impressive background as a grief counselor, both for people who have lost pets and who have lost humans. So let's start off by having you talk briefly a bit about your background, if you would.
Sure. My educational background is in education and counseling. I have a master's in that. And previously, I was licensed as a clinical social worker working with youth with emotional disturbances. But in the course of my career, and I've had several of them, they've all been in the counseling fields, and this has been for over 25 years. Given all the careers that I've had, my most heartfelt and most rewarding has been my grief counseling. Regarding my grief counseling work, I completed University of California at Berkeley's professional program in the study of loss and grief, and I'm also a nationally board certified thanatologist. And a thanatologist is a grief counselor who deals with death, dying, and bereavement. I've been very fortunate to be trained, and I also volunteer for an organization in Palo Alto, California named CARA, which offers emotional support and information to adults, teenagers, children who are grieving a death or coping with a life-threatening illness. And in addition to working at CAR as a volunteer, I have a private practice where I do grief work with individuals and couples who are grieving the loss of a beloved pet or human.
Okay, that's quite a background. It's very impressive. And it is something I think that's interesting is that you can speak to both sides of grief, I think, in terms of what we feel when we lose a human family member and what we feel when we lose a pet family member. And I think one of the things we'll maybe find out today is if we, in fact, have different responses to those. So let me ask you first. Almost everyone I know tries to avoid the issue of death, no matter how imminent it is or inevitable it is. Is that a cultural predilection or is it a genetic one? And why do we feel that way?
Okay, great question. It is a cultural influence. And what it is, in our Western society, we almost never contemplate or discuss death. It's disregarded as, it's regarded as being something that we should avoid. It's a bad thing. And we're never quite prepared when it happens. In that avoidance, some people aren't even comfortable using the word death. They choose to use euphemisms instead when a pet dies or even a human dies. They'll say things such as, this pet has passed away or he's no longer with us. So the reality of the death can be an enormously painful and shocking thing for individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And what else do I want to say? We're not... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I say one more thing. We're not really conditioned to cope with death of again, both people or deceased pets until after the fact. And our perceptions can be very distorted when that happens. And one of the underlying reasons for that is it frightens us and it often brings up hidden fears of our own mortality. Mm. And that can make the mourning period even worse.
Okay. So with people who live with and love pets, I think we understand that intellectually we'll most likely bury them. I know that's not a very nice way of put it, but that's probably what it's most likely like, that we will see them die before we do. And yet, in my case, as an example, we're absolutely devastated when they do. And I don't, you know, I knew intellectually that Cairo would die someday, but when he became ill with and died of cancer within 9 days. It was very fast moving cancer.
Wow.
And I was absolutely devastated. And, you know, I'm still dealing with it, obviously. Why is it so difficult for us to accept the fact that they're going to die beforehand? You talk about people who maybe aren't prepared for it. Is that just part of it? Is it because of that we have the option, for example, of euthanasia, meaning that we have a hand in their death? Why would that be?
Okay. So when I said people weren't prepared for it, I was actually speaking more emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
You're right to discern and ask, what is the difference between being intellectually prepared but not really emotionally prepared for the death? And it's a phenomena that's true whether we're anticipating the loss of an ill pet, and people would think, well, maybe in that pre-grieving stage, they have done a lot of the grieving, and they would distinguish that from when there's a sudden type of loss. But in fact, we are never prepared emotionally. Our body's reaction to loss, and that's what grief is, hits us in a very profound way after the pet has died, not before, even if we, again, intellectually understand all of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we have a question from someone who says, as a vet tech, I'd like to hear what clients find most comforting in the whole death process, particularly if it is euthanasia, the little things that make a big difference as well as the big things. How might the processes be improved and what causes the most avoidable pain?
Well, that's a really good question. I want to first start by saying there's not a definitive answer to that. Euthanasia is a very distinguishing factor, as we all know, from losing humans. We don't typically have that option.
Mm-hmm.
When it presents itself as an option for our pets, it puts us in a very unique decision-making posture that we haven't been in before or never will be probably in any other time. Is that the most comforting place for people to be? People do like to be in control, and nothing is more unsettling as death to make us feel so out of control. I think, you know, there's a lot we could talk about with euthanasia. In preparing for that, both in terms of, I call them pet guardians or pet parents, both at home, as well as communicating with the veterinary staff, it's important to be very well informed, to understand all the ramifications of what the process will be like, to make sure that all the questions have been asked of the veterinary staff so that someone can feel as confident as possible that everything has been done before one turns to that, making that kind of decision.
Mm-hmm.
With all that being said, even after a lot of thorough contemplation and people feeling like it's really in the best interest for the pet, and the veterinarians might confirm that in fact is the next best thing, it's a very complicated thing, even though it may seem like the most logical thing to do next.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just euthanasia. Could you ask me other parts of that question again that I don't
Sure,
think
absolutely.
I
she said, what do clients find most comforting in the whole death process, particularly if it is euthanasia? Do you think they do? Do you know?
Do they find that comforting? It's really, really mixed.
Mm-hmm.
think some people, we're all different, and I'll get into that when we talk about the way different people bond. Depending on our attachment, people will respond very differently. Some people do find that enormously comforting. Other people prefer, and their fantasies might be, and I think this may be true for most people, they will hope that their pet will die in their arms, that they will not have to be in that decision-making process.
Right.
So I'm not sure there's a lot that really comforts people. I think in the aftermath of what's happened, that's where the healing needs to happen with other people who can normalize everything, both for their grief and for the decisions that they've made. A lot of time when regrets come up after euthanization, for example, the regrets can be, I waited too long, I didn't wait long enough. There can be enormous, enormous pain and really self-criticism, and then a lot of work needs to be done with teaching someone how to forgive themselves.
Okay. So, and I would think that euthanasia in some way maybe adds guilt, a sense of guilt into all of this, that I was the one who decided.
Exactly. And that's what I was saying. Yeah. So here we are empowered to make that decision, and then when it's made, people question that decision. Again, did I do that too soon? Did I wait too long for that?
Right.
Did they really know that this was the right time? I know people who have enormously regretted that choice afterwards, and sometimes just before a pet dies, just before the euthanasia process, the procedure is done, they see a flinching of their animal, and they are just ravaged with pain as a result of that. And the other very common thing is they'll talk about, I killed my pet. So it's a very complicated decision to make.
Yeah, and I would see that would be a complication that right now, because we don't have euthanasia for humans, in at least California, that we don't face with. So I can see that. Now, in that other part of that question she asked, is there a way that the processes can be improved? And I think she's talking about the euthanasia process. Is there any way that it can be improved?
Well, I have given talks and with different veterinary staff, and some of them are absolutely wonderful. My observations are the cancer centers, which veterinary cancer centers, of course, deal with an enormous amount of loss. There can be tremendous sensitivity. Some of them have designated a specific grieving room. There's often a pre-grieving room for the pet family to have their goodbyes in a very calm, nurturing space. And then the rooms where the euthanasia are performed, it's often best when it's also more of a natural kind of setting. Now, some people prefer to have their dogs euthanized at home, and that can be a preference, but that sometimes isn't affordable for everyone. When that does happen, then people need to consider, who do they want to be there? And this is true at a vet clinic as well. Do they want their children there? If people might ask, well, is that a good thing? I personally and professionally think that is a good thing, because the more open you are with children, it really helps kind of neutralize the impact of death.
Yeah.
So the sensitivity to the staff, and then having a room to go back to afterwards. Some clients will talk about pets being whisked away too quickly and how devastating that was, because during the procedure they may feel absolutely numb.
Right. Well, you've certainly described a lot of the experiences I've had with my own pets, so I can certainly understand that. Now, there's one thing I do know from working with animals and the people who love them, and from my own friends and family, is that we all seem to have maybe different bonds with our pets. And you mentioned that not everyone bonds with their pets in the same way. What are the different types of bonding, and how does that affect how you feel when your pet dies?
Great. People describe these, or I should say the researchers in the field describe these in different ways, Lisa. So I'm going to use the description used by Dr. Lori Green, and her book will be referenced on your website.
Okay.
The first group, they're called conventionally bonded, according to Dr. Green. Mm-hmm. And these are animal lovers who consider their pets as members of their family. They don't always give them the same status as other members of the family, but they do provide loving homes. They take good care of their pets medically. They feed them. But losing a pet is not a source of major trauma for them. They can feel grief over the pet loss, but then they recover more quickly than the other bonding types. The second group, they're called intensely bonded. These pet guardians don't regard their pets, they do regard their pets as very integral family members, and they tend to form deep emotional attachments and provide them with the same level of care they would a family member. They might, for example, exceed their financial means to care for them. They might consider their pets their surrogate children, call them their son, their daughter, and they may go the extra mile with their pets. Their grieving process will be long and extended. The third group, they're called uniquely bonded. These are people with the deepest attachment to their pets. They are people who often prefer the company of their pets to humans. They might have trust issues with people, therefore it's easier to bond with their pet animals. They might call their pets their soulmates, their closest friends, their sons, their daughters. You may know of some people who dress their pets up in costumes. Some of them might even roll their pets in strollers. And this is a way, we describe it as anthropomorphizing our pets, and that's attributing human characteristics to pets. These are people in that category. And in some ways, it's been discussed that that is robbing pets of their natural nature. But this this deep bond, that's very normal for people in this group, and I am pretty much in this group myself. The loss to their group, the loss to of their beloved pet can be devastating, and the grief might last a very, very long time. And society doesn't understand this level of pain, and they don't consider it legitimate. But I know we'll get into that next week.
Yes, we will. This is, and that's a good point to make for everyone listening. This is a two-part series because this isn't a topic we could cover in 30 minutes. So we will talk with Bonnie again next week about a lot of different topics still left in this. But let's talk a little bit more about this bonding. If you are, for example, uniquely bonded to one pet, is it possible that you could be intensely bonded to a different pet in your family and have different bonding?
Absolutely. That's a very good question. Absolutely. That group, it's not a prescription that we will grieve the same way for every pet. We, of course, don't. Lisa, you may have had that experience. I certainly have myself. When we think about, well, what are the different ways that people grieve in general, there are a lot of variabilities that affect us. So there are past experiences with grief and death. Our individual personality differences and styles and our histories affect that. The degree and quality of our social support, our spiritual, religious, ethnic backgrounds, cultural influences, age and gender, special nature of our relationship to the pet, as we just said, the circumstances that went into how our pet died, and also that when we lose a pet, and it can be the timing as well in our lives, the death of a pet can evoke other painful losses and other deaths, such as other kinds of deaths or divorces or other transitions in our lives.
Okay. Now, we have another question, which is in terms of how people grieve. And I think maybe you have touched on this or answered this already, but it says, do you have some perspective on situations and personalities that have the most difficulty dealing with grief? And you did mention, obviously, people who are uniquely bonded. And what other types of people? I mean, because I know we do all grieve differently. We bond differently with our pets. We grieve differently as well. What are some of the ways that or some of the difficulties that people and certain people in certain situations would provide for people in terms of grieving with for their pet?
Often I can describe that first by talking about the circumstances can evoke different reactions in us. So an anticipated death, we might go through the typical stages of grief and loss, and I'll get into those next time. Whereas if it's a sudden death or shock, and again, I know we're going to get into this as well, we might not be able to cry at first. we might be numb and we can't, we just don't know how to respond. We move into a, you know, place of very extreme denial. It will be that both the uniquely bonded and the intensely bonded that are going to have the most severe reactions. And when I say severe, I don't mean that in a negative kind of way. There are different types of grieving. People will cry where they embrace their feelings and release it through tears. They talk to others about their grief, and that is the best way to heal one's heart. Some people can't deal with it at all, and they suppress their feelings. It doesn't feel safe for them. They're just not able to access their emotions. Some will say that's true for men. Well, that's changing a lot. I've seen a lot of men in my practice. Some describe feeling non-functional, vegetative. They might resort to isolation and not want to talk up at all. It can be very frightening. It makes people feel very vulnerable. They've never felt this way before. And so what's important, whether you're a professional or just a family member or friend, is to make sure to normalize all the feelings. There's not a right way or a wrong way. Our grief is really very unique to each of us.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard, I know, within a family when you have members who grieve differently, I'm sure, as well. Do you see that in your practice?
Absolutely. I absolutely do. The people who are more intensely and uniquely bonded will stay in the depths of their grief and pain much, much longer, perhaps. Some people will move on more quickly. So the differences with the spouse and the children compared to their parents might be quite different. Mm-hmm. And so not everyone is on the same page, and right, that can make it enormously challenging.
And I know our clients, we talk about this a lot with some of our clients who have, whose pets have died. And I think it's for those of us who are so closely bonded with our pets, when you lose them, it's as heartbreaking as, and I know because my father has died, so I know what it's like to lose people very close to me, but I've lost my pets as well, and it was not just a dog when Cairo died, and I can't stand it when people tell our clients or us, well, you can always go get another one. For those of us who love our pets, losing them can be just as painful, I think. And in some ways, maybe even more painful than losing a human family member. So why is that?
Okay, let me explain why. And as you just said at the end, for many, many people who lose their pets, it can be much more difficult than losing humans. And the reason is, unlike our relationships with our spouses and parents, our relationships with our pets are virtually free of resentments. We don't have bad memories or disappointments or complications. There aren't failed hopes or jealousies or other kinds of empathic failures. So we can bond in a way with pets in a very different way than we can with humans. Our pets remind us of our own purity and our innocence, where we're seldom, in our lives, we're seldom free to show our true feelings to other people. And more so than with spouses or parents, pets are always there, especially for the young, the old, the lonely, and the vulnerable, but really it could be for just about anyone. So it's a very deep bond. It can be more intensely felt than losing a human. And what's important is for people to both acknowledge their feelings, even though what might come with that are a lot of feelings of guilt. Why? How could I dare feel more for the loss of my pet than I'm feeling with my parents? Mm-hmm. Well, it could be very complicated, but it could be that, especially in older people, well, their parents maybe live in another part of the country and they don't see them regularly, but their pet has been there for them through all their life passages and transitions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And why do we feel, this is something that I've often puzzled over, why do people either kind of inflict it or we allow them to, the feelings of shame and guilt over grieving for a pet? That's something that really, I have to say, I never quite understand why we should feel guilty because we grieve for someone we lost. It's really just about a loss of love, regardless of who it was that we loved.
Right. Well, let's first define very briefly what is guilt. And it's really a thought. It's just a thought that's triggered by a past event. And it really is a very normal part of grieving. I don't think one can grieve fully without not having that part in their grieving process. A lot of people focus on the what ifs and the shoulds. And you know, we'll see this with human losses as well. People might ask, for example, did I do enough? Why didn't I take my pet to the vet in time? Why was it that I left the door open just a few inches and they were able to get it out? Why was I not, right, all the whys, whys, whys? Mm. Did I euthanize him or her too soon? They can feel guilty that that they might be feeling more intense grief, as we said, for a pet versus a human, and people just agonize over that feeling. They know it's true for them, but that it does evoke a lot of shame. So again, these things have to be normalized and validated. Mm-hmm. And with all kinds of losses, people feel a sense of personal failures, even if they're ill-defined. It may not make sense, but they still are evoked. But last one thing to keep in mind is we can get very stuck in guilt. It can be immobilizing in the present about a past event. So people do need, and I mentioned this earlier, need to learn to forgive themselves. So the people who are stuck, they often come to a grief counselor or go to a therapist to try to understand why they are kind of really stuck or enmeshed in that state that paralyzes them and they can't move forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm assuming that the people you see must be uniquely bonded or intensely bonded than all. Yeah. So, yeah. And those are the people who would feel those kinds of feelings. But I think there is that sense for people who, for example, who are either conventionally bonded or who are not at all pet people, animal people, that they don't understand how you can love an animal so deeply. And I think that makes it difficult for people to deal with as well.
Absolutely, and it can result in people feeling enormously misunderstood and lonely, and that's why over the last several years, and this is a relatively new field, Lisa, it's only been around for 12 or 14 years, over the course of time, a number of grief support groups have surfaced, both in person as well as online, and there are some references that your listeners will find on your site, which will help them understand how do they get that kind of support. And many of these, I will tell you, are free.
Right. And that is, thank you for reminding me. I'll tell everyone on the show notes, we will put up Bonnie's list of resources for anyone who's interested. It's a very comprehensive list. So we'll go ahead and put that up on the show notes for the website for today. So in the case of people who have more questions about bereavement, and next week we are going to address many of those. Bonnie and I have already talked about a bit on what's coming up, and we'll talk about why well-meaning friends and family members so often downplay the pain of losing a pet and what some of the physical effects of grief are. And Bonnie has some strategies that she's going to recommend for coping with the loss of a pet. So I think next week's show will be as interesting as this week's has been. And I thank you, Bonnie, for joining us today.
You're so welcome, Lisa, and all your listeners. And I look forward to being here next week at the same time.
Yeah, we'll continue the conversation. So to everyone listening, be sure to join us next week at 1 p.m. Pacific time for part two of Pet Loss and Bereavement. And also, as always, today's show is brought to you by Scout's House. If you have a dog or cat who is geriatric, recovering from injury or illness, or who is just suffering from a long-term chronic or debilitating illness or disease, we have a website that's just for you. And on our online store, there's a wide variety of products designed specifically to help your pet live a more comfortable and more functional life. And that's scoutshouse.com. So thank you all for listening today. We will be back to finish this conversation next week at 1 p.m. Pacific time on pdx.fm, and that is where you'll find us then. I'm Lisa Starr from Scouts House.